Hi, this is Niels Hagort, co-author of the new vSphere Clustering Deep Dive book, and you are listening to the magnificent Virtually Speaking podcast. Take it away, guys.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 86. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, buongiorno.
Hey, I hear you're back in the States.
I am. I'm an American once again. I am back, and I am full VMworld force, man. I am nothing but VMworld. Getting all my sessions going, doing demos, just registering for sessions. It's crazy. How about you?
I was going to say the same. It's you know, the race is on to VMworld to get all the content ready. I mean, it was all done, you know, months ago, right? Right? in our case, Pete, I just got yesterday unembargoed the vSTAN What's New session. This is one thing. If you already went to the registration for sessions first open, you know, weeks or months back, keep in mind that once we get closer to VMworld, some sessions will magically appear in the catalog. So,
yeah, that's tricky because it's like, this is a good session, but they haven't announced it until like a day ago. So yeah, the What's New vSAN session should be pretty good. We'll have links for that one. We're actually going to do a whole VMworld preview like we do every year. We're going to be doing that one next week. So that'll be fun. So we'll talk about all the things you might want to know. If you've never been, you'll probably learn some things. Even if you've been, you might learn a few things. And so we'll have a whole session that just talks about getting ready for VMworld. But speaking of getting ready for VMworld, as I mentioned, I was looking at some of the sessions that I want to make sure I attend. And there were a couple of that caught my eye, and I wanted to bring these guys on and talk about them. And so we're going to do that here in just a second. Let's actually bring the panel on, and then I'll tell you about the sessions. Joining us today to help the conversation, he was a co-host a couple of weeks ago, Mr. Miles Gray. Miles, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Pete. Good to be back.
Yeah, so that might be a hint to what we're talking about today. We're talking about Kubernetes, and Miles is not only a vSAN expert, but he seems to have a pretty good handle on Kubernetes. So I like to pick his brain whenever possible. But John, as I mentioned, there was a couple of sessions that I wanted to see at VMworld, two sessions in particular, and we're going to bring these guys on and talk about them because there's a little bit of overlap. We're talking about Kubernetes, whether it's on vSAN or if it's just on regular vSphere. But I wanted to talk about that with some guys that are running some great sessions at VMworld. And those two gentlemen are no strangers to the podcast, Mr. Cormac Hogan. Cormac, welcome back.
Thank you, Pete. Hey, guys. How's it going?
All righty. And I think this is like his fourth time, Mr. Frank Denneman. Frank, welcome back to the podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. How are you?
Doing all right, man. Doing all right. So before we get into those sessions, I just wanted to say, Frank, I ordered your book, the VMware vSphere 6.7 Clustering Deep Dive. It's on Amazon. I'm looking forward to getting that one to add to my collection. I think this is my third book now of yours. So that's more than any other author. So you better be impressed by that. I don't read a lot of books, but if it says Frank Denneman, I'm going to read it.
I am. And it's also always awesome to hear that there's so much support in the community and by guys that, well, you guys work for VMware, right? And you still buy such a book.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's great.
Oh, yeah. I was writing a blog post the other day, and I had that Clustering Deep Dive book right there on my side because I was like, I had to learn some things, and I was reading, and I was like, it's so great to have these resources right here. So thank you for that. This one you wrote, again, with Duncan, but also big brain Niels Hagort. Those three guys are on this 6.7 Clustering Deep Dive book. I noticed there was a different logo this time. I think last time there was scuba gear for like deep diving, but this one, it looked like a submarine. What's up with that?
Yeah, so the first one had a diver's helmet, right? And if you really, really want to dive deep, you need to have extra equipment, right? And so instead of a snorkel, you need to have a diver's helmet to go to the Mariana Trench deep. Now, the thing is that we were talking about a host, so that's a single one. But what do you need when you want to go deep with a couple of things, right? With a cluster. So you need a couple of hosts. That's why we chose the submarine, because it's a collection of people, it's a collection of hosts.
I so like it.
Yeah.
Ah, clever.
Very clever. You're like a real marketing guy, man. This is, you're like technical and you got these fans. Did you design the logo yourself as well?
No. We just basically ripped it off somebody else.
Fair enough. I love it. All right, cool. All right. Well, the sessions I wanted to talk about, and by the way, these sessions are full. So if you try to register for them, please continue to try because you can actually get on the waiting list. And the way VMworld does it is if it's on a waiting list, because they start with a smaller room, and if they get enough people on the waiting list, they move it to a bigger room. So if you see them full, be sure to register anyway. The first one is Deep Dive, the value of running Kubernetes on vSphere. That one is with Frank, as well as a guy named Michael Gash. And so that one's we're going to talk about. But the other one is with Cormac and Office of the CTO, Mr. Christos Karamanolos. I always mangle his last name, but Karamanolos. So Christos and Cormac are doing a session on the ideal operational environment for cloud-native applications. That one sounds really intriguing to me. So I'm really looking forward to talk about those because we had a good Kubernetes conversation a couple of weeks ago with Miles and with Chad. And that was like a good, you know, that was a good way to wet our whistle on Kubernetes. But I still have the big question, and we can start with that. And Cormac, I'd love for you to jump into this. Why would I want to deploy Kubernetes on vSphere?
It's a great question. So I think, you know, and Frank will obviously add to this as well. And probably don't want to give too much away. But I think vSphere is a great environment because of what it can already do for you. So when you think of something like Kubernetes, you have one or more master nodes, you have a number of worker nodes. But the thing is, when you're running container-based applications in these nodes, you want things like being able to place them on particular nodes. You want to be able to ensure that nodes that are providing the same parts of an application are not sitting on the same host as well. So things like distribution, things like load balancing, things like being able to tolerate failures. I think those are all of the things that we've been doing for years with vSphere. And we can also offer those type of features for Kubernetes as well. So I think that's kind of the gist of what we're going to be talking about. But there are some other things that we want to talk about as well. You know, and it's not just Kubernetes. I mean, yes, Kubernetes is going to be part of what we're talking about. But in the particular session that I'm doing with Christos, it's more about next-gen applications. Kubernetes will be one of those. Kubernetes as a framework for being able to run next-gen apps. But we're also talking about things like big data and Hadoop. If we look at the vendors of Hadoop, they look for a particular deployment mechanism.
Okay.
So data locality being one of those, being able to provide data services within the application, that's another thing that we can do with Hadoop. So we're looking at it from a HCI perspective. Can the application take care of some of those things for us, or do we need to do it at the HCI layer? So that's another thing we're looking at and another thing that we will be talking about in our session as well.
Nice.
Yeah, so I think Cormac did a tremendous job about explaining why you want to have vSphere, right? We do a lot of things already for you in the infrastructure layer without having too much to do, right? So what we hear is from a lot of customers, they're saying, we're thinking about running Kubernetes, but we're also thinking about running it on bare metal because Kubernetes has all these things that vSphere also has, like HA, like initial placement.
Yeah.
If a container fails, it will be restarted somewhere else, and that's all good. Yeah, but if you look at the details, it's not really the same, right? For example, initial placement, yeah, it does have initial placement, but it takes particular settings into account, like the amount of resources you want to reserve, request in Kubernetes terms. But if you're not doing that for 100%, that means there is a little bit of resources left that basically is up for grabs, right? So if there are resources, you can get them. If they're not, you're not getting it. But that's the only thing it does. It just looks at the request, and based on that, it's going to place it somewhere in its cluster. Now, what we do with vSphere is we look at the overall utilization. That means that if one virtual machine that runs Kubernetes, because in essence, it's just a Linux operating system that schedules her processes in the most simplistic form, right? I'm doing a little bit of harm to it, but that's basically what you need to think about.
Okay.
Now, the moment we see that Linux machine is being starved from resources or not getting the resources it requires, we can move it over without any human interaction, like DRS, right? All these things. But one thing you can't forget, and actually Cormac showed me that on one of the slides in his presentation, the number of stateful application that runs in containers is actually insane. It's 7 out of 10 are actually stateful. So that means all the things that are so unique for containers, that they are stateless and that you can kill them off and that you can restart them somewhere else, isn't really true.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Some of the application, right? So with that, if you need to patch a Linux machine, either on hardware or on software, what you do with containers is you kill them off and you start them on another worker inside your Kubernetes cluster. But if you run a stateful application, that doesn't make sense, right? So now you need to contact the developer or the customer who owns the application. And you need to figure out whether you can do it or not. Now with us, if you run that virtual machine in a Linux box and you need to patch the hardware, you just migrate with vMotion the Linux box over to another ESX host and you can patch the stuff, right? Or you could take away a lot of the problems because we offer hardware abstraction. All these things help. And to be honest, it looks like we're back in 2005. That's what I typically say, because we're discussing things like, yeah, I'm going to build a cluster. Yeah, you're going to build a cluster right now. You're going to build one Kubernetes cluster right now. But within a year, I will bet you have 10, right? And now how are you going to do that from a utilization perspective? There are some clusters who are going to run hot, so you need to add more hardware. And like I said in the VMware Cloud and AWS presentations before and on the podcast, the discussions we had, on average, it takes a customer 86 days to actually get hardware in the data center. How are you going to do that when you're building a new service on Kubernetes? Because it's new, everybody wants it,
yeah.
But now you need to wait for 86 days while you already have that infrastructure laying around. You already have it up and running. Just deploy the Linux VM, right? Start from there.
I think it has some connotations operationally as well, because if you think about it, if you're deploying to bare metal, all of the tool sets and tool chains and training that your admins have done for vSphere are essentially useless at that point, because you're going to have to choose a new overlay technology. You're going to have to figure out how to deploy scale-out storage to Linux nodes directly. You're going to have to use something like Flannel or Weaveworks or whatever, because you can't use your admins aren't trained on how to use that. So if they're used to NSX, they're going to go and have to learn a completely new networking mechanism. They're going to have to learn how to manage and operationalize storage around a bare metal host, which, like Frank says, is an antiquated thing at this point. I just don't see why you would want to retrain everyone to do it. It feels like what people tried to do with OpenStack. They're trying to do again with Kubernetes.
Well, you only have to look at something as simple as a maintenance mode operation for a host and all the operational work we have done around a maintenance mode. It's not just the vMotion of VMs, but with vSAN, it's the evacuation of the data as well. All of that is in one single step. So have to think about all of that again.
Well, and I just think of trying to, under operationalizing the underlay bits, having to deal with the driver firmware interactions of a completely different platform. And at that point, eventually some grown-up's going to step in and say, we need to pay for someone else to validate this. And you're looking at some, large enterprise Linux distribution. And the support payments for that are going to cost you, that's actually often more expensive than vSphere. So potentially you're going to end up actually, if you're looking at it from a cost basis, you're going to end up paying the same or more. And you're going to honestly get a much more incomplete resource and maintenance and automation framework in that regard.
I like it. Well, what is Amazon? What do the big boys do? Like when they're deploying Kubernetes, do they deploy it in bare metal or do they also put it in some form of virtual machine?
All are virtualized. Google Cloud Platform virtualized. Amazon virtualized. Azure virtualized. So why do you think you can do it better, right?
Good point.
I try not to always fall into the cargo cult of what is the big cloud guy doing who has 40,000 instances, but because sometimes people start doing wacky things that you shouldn't do when you scale down. But no, this is a case of why is very strong.
Miles, you've been working on a project. I think it's called Project Hatchway, which also has Kubernetes. That's on vSphere, correct?
Yeah, well, it works. It works with any vSphere data store, but it has a lot more tie-ins whenever it comes to vSAN because it can use SPBM. Obviously, you can use SPBM for VMFS and NFS as well if you want. But it essentially removes the vSphere admin from the tool chain whenever it comes to provisioning storage for containers. So developers, through their Kubernetes YAML files and config files, can just have their containers provision storage dynamically on demand without having to have any admin intervention. They can define things like the availability levels, performance levels, stripe widths, all that kind of stuff that you can do through SPBM, but they can just do it direct in Kubernetes, which is really, really powerful.
Oh, it ties into SPBM automatically, or it's the same management framework?
Yeah, so Hatchway essentially maps storage classes within Kubernetes to SPBM policies or SPBM policy attributes.
Ooh.
for me, I was actually quite surprised how easy it was. You know, you simply create the storage class, which actually says it's a vSAN data store, and this is the policy I want you to use. And then you have your claim rule, which says something like, use this storage class, but make it 2 gigabytes in size or 10 gigabytes in size. And then you just put the reference in the YAML file for the application, mount point, boom, there you go. It's really, really easy to consume. And I think that's what developers are looking for, yeah.
There's no pre-provisioning of VMDKs up front. You don't have to manually create them and mount them into the VMs or anything like that. It's all just done on demand automatically direct from Kubernetes. And it works with vanilla Kubernetes. You don't need to have any kind of specialized version that we distribute or anything like that. It's just a standard plugin for Kubernetes.
And it's not just vSAN, right, Miles? It can also be vVol policies as well, or any sort of policy. You just plug it right in there into the claim rule, I think, and off you go.
Absolutely. Any SPBM policy. So that could be feasibly vVols, and then you can specify subcategories within vVols, or you could even do it with VMFS and NFS if you want to.
Nice. So then you can even do QoS policies and on this at the foundational level.
At a container volume level, yeah. The granularity is at a container volume level, which is it's extremely powerful.
Yeah, I think you just got it right. It's the power of SPBM. So sorry for the plug again, but I'm doing a session with Duncan Epping on SPBM, and we're going to go through vSAN, vVols. We're going to go through how you can automate the deployment of VMs with different policies. We're also going to talk about containers as well and Project Hatchway, or if we were to use the Kubernetes speak, it's the VCP, right? It's the vSphere cloud provider if we're going to talk about Kubernetes. But the fact that you can just have a RAID 5 volume, RAID 6 volume, RAID 1 volume, and we're talking about container volumes now. We're not talking about VM volumes. What we're doing is we're instantiating VMDKs, virtual machine disk files, and attaching those VMDKs directly to the container application. So essentially what happens is that your container application is instantiated on a worker node, a Kubernetes worker node, which for us would be a VM running on vSphere. And that VMDK is associated with that worker node, but is dedicated to the container application that's running within that worker node. So it's pretty cool stuff. Very powerful.
If you want to see more about how this works or demos and how it's all sort of put together, I'm doing a session of VMworld actually with Tushar Tole on this exact thing. We're going to demo how Hatchway works at a fundamental level, spin up some applications, show how the volumes are mounted, created on vSAN side, and then pushed into the containers dynamically.
Yeah, and so this is coming back to the session that I'm doing as well with Christos, is that one of the reason why we say that vSAN or is the optimal solution, obviously with vSphere, for these container-based solutions. One of the problems that we're trying to address is this problem of persistent storage. And Frank said it already. Out of the top 10 containerized applications, 7 of them require persistent storage. So this is addressing that need. We think with vSAN, true SPBM, true Project Hatchway, or the vSphere cloud provider in Kubernetes, essentially the same thing, we're able to achieve that.
All right. Frank, I got a question for you. You're one of the most authoritative performance experts that I know. So my question to you is, what are some of the benefits, or be frank, what are some of the challenges using Kubernetes on vSphere as it pertains to performance management?
So that's a good question. And I think it's the mapping of the different constructs of delivering the resources. So within Kubernetes, you can assign requests and limits to a container. That means I'm going to allow you to use a number of resources, which is the limits, up to a particular level. And the request is basically, I'm going to make sure you will always get these resources. So that's the equivalent of a reservation at a VM. But now what we're talking about containers, right? So we're talking actually about a process within a Linux virtual machine. And so you're carving up the resources of that virtual machine towards your containers. So that's not visible to the scheduler of the hypervisor, the CPU scheduler and the memory scheduler. So what you typically do is you say, okay, I'm going to create a worker VM, the Kubernetes worker, and I'm going to assign it 64 gigs. One of the things what we're saying is, hey, assign at least 64 gigs or an X amount of resources as a reservation to that VM. So you know that there are physical resources available to that particular Linux VM, and they can, and it can give it towards the containers as well. But one of the cool things that we need to think about is how can we actually the same thing as what the storage guys do? How can we get that container level resource management visible to the vSphere administrator, right? And now we're working on some cool projects, and I'm not allowed to talk about it in detail, but we're thinking about how to get to that layer, right?
You're such a and tease.
The interesting thing is it's reversing. It's actually thinking about the functional requirements, right? So what actually do you need, and how can we provide this in a way that it actually can work with the rest of the ecosystem? So what Miles talked about, right? Your current tool set and your current skill set, right? How can we patch into that as well, so we don't have to retrain everybody to actually work with the container? So it has to be transparent. We are thinking about, or we're not thinking about, we're already way ahead of creating vSphere as the uniform or unified platform for all compute workloads, whether it's VMs, whether it's containers, or actually function as a service as well, right?
No, so you're dead right, Frank. What I'd like to highlight is the fact that we already have customers who are running Kubernetes on top of vSphere, running applications on Kubernetes on top of vSphere, running all sorts of next-gen apps there, like Hadoop that I mentioned, and MongoDBs, all of those kind of next-gen apps that we hear about. Customers are already running them on the vSphere platform, also already running them on vSAN. But there are operational challenges right now about doing it, and I think that's where we can improve. We can make things a lot easier, operationally a lot easier. That's kind of some of the things that we're going to be talking about in our session as well. Sort of looking towards the future. I mean, there's obviously things we cannot talk about, but there's some interesting things going on that hopefully we will be able to sort of highlight at VMworld, fingers crossed.
So can you share, so are there any, it's baked, right? I mean, like, it's something that's usable. Like you said, we already have customers that are using Kubernetes on inside of VMware environments, inside of vSphere. But as every product that's newer, there are some limitations. Are there any huge ones, or is it just, minor, issues of feature parity with a typical vSphere environment?
Well, I think one of the things, if we mentioned it already, something as simple as maintenance mode, right? So
yeah.
how do we get that intelligence from you doing something at a physical host layer? You can bubble that up into a virtual machine, but can we then bubble it up into Kubernetes and the applications that are running within Kubernetes? So things like, has this application got protection? Does it matter if I take this application down? Well, it's protected already, so no.
Yeah,
but maybe it's not protected. So these are the kind of things that we need to figure out. And I think just having, as Frank just said, a uniform environment would need to understand all of these different nuances from an operational perspective. I think that's one of the big things that that's one of the gaps that we would look to close.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cormac, I had a question for you as well. I had read a blog from you, it was a while ago, on deploying Kubernetes on vSphere. And there was a traditional way, I think it was called like kubeup and kubedown. And then recently you posted a blog talking about that way was sort of dated, and there's a better way to do it using something called Kubernetes Anywhere. So if anyone has been playing with Kubernetes, have things changed in terms of deploying it inside of vSphere that we need to talk about?
So I think it was the Project Hatchway team led by Tushar at the time, who's going to be presenting with Miles. I think it was his team who did the Kubernetes Anywhere, which was basically just all the plugins they needed to understand what a vCenter was, and to deploy the ESXi hosts, deploy the VMs, all of that good stuff. But it's been a couple of years now since I looked at that, Pete. And I think that these days, it's primarily PKS is what we're looking at for the deployment of Kubernetes on vSphere.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of ways that you can deploy Kubernetes on vSphere. Like Cormac said, PKS is one of them, and it's got the composability and all that good stuff that goes along with that. Kubernetes Anywhere as a project I messed with a while back, like Cormac said as well, it's open source, but PKS has sort of taken over from it. So
For
me, it didn't work for the newer versions of Kubernetes. I'm sure people can put in pull requests and make it work with the new versions, but it's not actively being maintained.
Oh, okay. So PKS is the way to go if you're playing around.
If you're just playing around with it, you can just throw out some Linux VMs and put kubectl or kubeadmin on top of them and do it that way. But Kubernetes Anywhere isn't what we would recommend nowadays if you're gonna try it out.
So we've talked about persistent, data, persistent containers. This isn't just all DevOps hipster battle that we go shooting randomly here. But how do you protect that data? Isn't that the next big challenge?
Yeah, that's a good question, John. There's a couple of areas that we're looking at with regard to protection for data around containers and container volumes specifically. I would argue that one of the best ways to protect your data is to put it on vSAN, and then you can just back it up like a normal volume. So, a lot of people discount that. Whenever they go to bare metal, they don't think about how they're going to do backups for their volumes.
Ah.
And it's very challenging to have. If you have a current backup infrastructure that is that works with vSphere, it's challenging to find ones that work as well on bare metal. So that's one of the trivial things that people often throw, the baby out with the bathwater there. If they're talking about data protection and bare metal stuff, they don't think about how that ties in.
I mean, even if you can find some agent-based thing, you've lost access to change block tracking. So you're going to have to generate a lot more I/O as part
of the
process. Yeah. So your backup windows are going to be, and I've actually heard people say like, oh, we don't need backups. We're doing DevOps. And I'm like, oh God, oh God. Like, it's the multi-way replica. I'm like, is your company publicly traded? Like, oh God.
A lot of that argument comes from, it replicates in the app natively. And it's like, yeah, well, so does Synchronous Sans. But if you corrupt one side, the other side's also corrupted. So good luck with that.
Yeah.
It is a challenge for sure. I mean, I've had this conversation with some of the guys from Veritas, I think DockerCon last year. And when you're dealing with containerized apps that are distributed across many, many workers, how do you get a point in time quiesce of that? How do you take a snapshot of that so that you can actually back that up?
Yeah.
It's a huge challenge for those guys. It's a huge challenge right now.
Well, that's something even from the traditional SQL world. I mean, there were a lot of cases where you had to make sure your backup software could support always on or clustered SQL because consistency issues.
Oh yeah, yeah, and it's the same issues we have with containerized apps for sure.
There's a lot of stuff still to think about whenever it comes to containers and operationalizing them, and this is stuff that we're thinking about and looking at towards the future, how we can solve some of these problems.
All right. Well, Miles, you brought it back to the fact that, you would do this on vSAN, but then, of course, that goes against the thought that somebody might want to go on bare metal, which makes me think, I don't know, is this true? Are people fighting to go bare metal? And if so, is it really to save money? Is that the main driver for choosing bare metal? Because I would imagine, why would you throw away all of the goodness that you already have within vSphere, like all of the years of technology like vMotion and HA and all of this, and being able to have data protection just to go bare metal? What's the benefit?
But the benefit is if I can build my own little silo and my own little dev island, then I can try to dodge all the normal accountability, like data protection, like compliance and audit. I think a lot of where I see people want to go off and build their own little island and silo is they want to get around a lot of the, it goes back to that, we're going to move fast. And they start trying to drop some of the core business requirements, of being a grown adult in the data center.
Okay. If you say
that's so. That's my cynical take. So
very cool. All right. Well, that's a good introduction in why you might want to use Kubernetes on vSphere. And there's a lot of great sessions if you're going to VMworld on some of the considerations, some of the benefits. And I'm glad to see that there's so many options out there. I'm definitely looking forward to learning more about Project Hatchway as well. And yeah, Frank, I'm definitely going to be checking out your session as well as the one with, I love going to, it's usually one of my favorite sessions of VMworld is seeing you and Niels doing the host resources deep dive. So looking forward to that one as well. What other sessions do you guys have this year?
I've got three in total, Pete. I'm doing one with Duncan Epping. We're going to talk about SPVM. I have another one then with Paddy O'Riordan, my Irish colleague. We're going to do one on vSAN performance.
Okay.
So we're going to look at all the different things that you need to think about if you're going to do a performance benchmark on vSAN. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about HCI Bench,
yeah,
which is our performance benchmark.
I saw that one last year. Do you have a lot of changes?
We're going to kind of focus really on how you're going to do a performance proof of concept. That's really what the outcomes is going to be.
Nice.
Just setting you up to do that. Yeah. And then of course there's the one that I'm doing with Christos, when we talked about using vSAN as the platform of choice for next gen applications and so on.
So you're a pretty smart guy, but Christos is like next level smart. Are you a little nervous about co-presenting with him?
Well, he is a fellow and he is our CTO, but yeah.
I mean, you can't even take the role of pretty face. No, like you really, yeah. All right. That's a good one. I'm looking forward to that one as well. Christos, I've seen him present before. Yeah. That dude is much wisdom there. So that'll be another good one. Frank, you're doing the host resources deep dive with Niels. You're doing the one that we've been talking about today with deploying Kubernetes on vSphere. What else you got?
So the one I with Kubernetes is with Michael Gash. That guy knows a crazy amount he has a crazy amount of knowledge about Kubernetes. So come for him.
Yeah.
Listen to his wisdom. It's amazing. The other one I have with Duncan, the age-old HA and DRS deep dive. So that's going to be a blast.
Yeah.
We haven't done that for a while now. So it's going to be like back to 2011, that type of thing. And then I have one with engineer. His name is Maarten Wiggers, and he works on the stuff we actually discussed in this podcast. So how can we incorporate the declarative system, what's used in Kubernetes, in vSphere, right? So how can we do this? So this is basically a tech preview, and it goes into detail about how actually cloud native and containers is going to change your role.
Yeah.
So you're going to interface more with DevOps. So it's more about the adjustment to going towards an SRE type of role. And then we talk about declarative systems and basically a bit on how are we going to do this within our VMware infrastructure, our ecosystem, like VMware Cloud and AWS, vSphere on-prem, and something else which I cannot talk about yet. So I have four sessions in total.
Always the tease, this guy. And Miles, we already got your sessions a couple of weeks ago. And of course, if you're listening to this, we will have links to all of the sessions on the show notes of this podcast. So be sure to check those out, especially if you're going to VMworld. And if you're not, then I'm sure they're going to be, we'll be sure to share those because they will be recorded. And there's going to be some great information out there. Last question for you, Mr. Cormac Hogan. Are you ready for some Vodgeball? Are you ready for some sabotage? Oh, man. You were my partner last year on Dodgeball, and we went out in the first round, buddy.
Yeah,
I think we need to.
We were terrible.
Isn't that why we recruited Miles? Like, we needed some better Dodgeball coverage?
Yeah, I'm on a sports scholarship here. Yeah.
he's on a Vodgeball scholarship. I love it. Very cool. All right, gentlemen. Well, listen, I'm super excited about learning more about Kubernetes on vSphere and seeing all these great sessions. Any more questions for these guys before we let them go, John?
No, I'm good.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Cormac, Frank, and Miles for joining us today and geeking out on Kubernetes. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
You're the virtual speaking guy.
See.
I am profoundly dumbfounded.
Oh, yeah.
Enough of this jibber jabber.